And now on Tucson Business Radio, let's find out how to be healthy, wealthy, and wise with your host, Karen Fisher.
Good afternoon. This is Karen Fisher with Summit Funding, your host for this afternoon's broadcast of Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise. We are broadcasting in beautiful Tucson, Arizona. I mean, the weather, like, I can't even believe that I'm indoors right now, but the weather is just absolutely phenomenal. And we are broadcasting from the Business Radio X, the Tucson Business Radio X studio, which actually is housed in Stewart Title's corporate offices off of Broadway. I have three amazing guests that I've had the honor of knowing for many years, each one of them for several years, which is really, really cool. And so I would like to, first and foremost, let you guys just say hi, say your name, and I get to read your bios. How's
that? My name is Don Cox. I am the owner of Farmers Insurance Agency, Don Cox Agency.
I'm Matthew Rosen. I'm the managing principal of Burke Hall & Company. We're an independent wealth management firm here in Tucson. And Karen, thank you for having us on here. I'm excited.
Super excited.
And I'm Tabitha Danlow. I'm very excited to be here as well. And I'm a professional certified coach with my own company, The Divine Sophia.
I love the name, The Divine Sophia, because there's lots of information about Sophia. But I want to let you know a little bit about the bios. And I'm going to just go backwards as far as the way that we're introduced. So Tabitha Danlow, as she said, she's a professional certified coach. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that, because it seems that anybody can hang up their shingle and be a coach, but there's really definitely difference. And she's also a certified professional integrative coach. And she specializes both in business and in life coaching. And I know for a fact, loves helping entrepreneurs, my favorite subject, to make more money and help everyone to be more authentically courageous. While her friends say that she's always been a coach, she's been a professional coach for over 3 years, has over 13 years of experience in the world of entrepreneurship, business strategy, leadership, and sales. Sales and skills. I like that.
Yeah.
She works with a wide range of clients, including startups to multi-million-dollar brands, 15-year-olds to 75-year-olds, and lives in Tucson, Arizona with her husband, Jared, and she has two wonderful fur babies named Shadow and Scooby. She's written one book already called Business Launch, How to Build a Business in 13 Weeks, and is working on her second book titled Serendipity, where she takes us through her life-changing adventures in Africa. When she isn't busy helping entrepreneurs and empowering others, she can be found cooking, baking, hiking, napping, Netflixing, and African dancing. I think Netflixing, that's going to be a new word to add to the dictionary. That's fantastic.
You know, Urban Dictionary.
Urban Dictionary. I love it. And then Matthew Rosen. Through the show, may I call you Matt?
Yes.
Is that okay? Because I really, how I know you. Matt Rosen is the managing director and registered principal of Burke Hall & Company. Now, being a registered principal is kind of like a big deal, just letting our listeners know. There's some specifics about that, and Matt will talk about what that means. He works with professionals nationwide who seek, among other goals, a work optional lifestyle. And I want to talk more about that, because as a work optional, what does that look like? Over the past 14 years, Matt and his business partners have developed and refined a process to put together the pieces of their financial puzzle together to allow their clients to look into the future and think about this. Look into the future with excitement and anticipation. And I know that that's really true, because there are many clients right now, they look into the future, honestly, with dread. They're not even happy to get up in the morning. Prior to his current career, Matt was an internationally ranked professional golfer, and while helping small golf companies grow and expand their brand. Matt still has a passion for golf and spends his limited free time working on his golf game, following his beloved Chicago Cubs. And just for the record, when the Chicago Cubs won, his son was born that same year. I mean, it was like the best year ever for him. But there'll be other best years, right?
Exactly.
Matt and his wife, Taya, live in Tucson, and he's enjoying reliving his childhood of modeling trains with their two-year-old son, Thayer, who is about the cutest thing on the planet other than my daughter. and then we have Don Cox. As you said, he's the Farmers Insurance. He's the Don Cox Agency. He's the owner and operator of the Farmers Insurance. And I want to have you talk a little bit about that, because people will think about insurance companies, but they don't understand what the difference is when you are actually an agency owner versus just somebody who has a shingle, if you will. Started his business, opened his practice from scratch in 2013. And he is a former public school teacher, God love you, public school teacher of 17 years. His goal is to educate people about their insurance needs and make recommendations suited to each person's unique situation. Don's specialty is helping his clients shield their personal and commercial assets and minimize the risk of financial catastrophe. And then he also has a beautiful wife and a wonderful daughter. And in his spare time, he's actually this really incredible musician who is part of the Steel... What is the official Calypso? Am I saying it right?
The name of the Steel band is Apocalypso.
Apocalypso. I got the Calypso piece of it, but the you say it again.
Apocalypso.
Okay, there you go. I usually am not tongue-tied, but that one gets me. So our show, it's Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise. Okay, Matt, you're the wealthy piece. You're handling with people's money. Okay, Tabitha, you're the wise piece. Okay. And you're healthy, you guys can both be healthy. So, so let's just talk about this. So first and foremost, because you all basically are business owners, what would you say? What was the impetus for you to start your own business or to be in business for yourself? What was that part, that craziness of that entrepreneur? Because, you know, only an entrepreneur would give up a job to go and... So most people start their own business because they want to be the boss. And who else would give up the stability? And so you were working for somebody, so now you are the boss. And then the other question is, have you now discovered you are now working for a lunatic? I mean, that's
which
the
is
truth
us.
Right?
Yeah,
my boss is very difficult on me sometimes.
Yes.
I'll go first. I decided to open my agency because I wanted greater freedom. One of the aspects of the insurance industry that I like is that my ability to do what I want to do is only limited by whatever limitations I put on myself, as far as just getting more business, servicing clients, and just growing a business. I liked the idea of having goals of building and just getting bigger and better every year, and freedom. I can leave at 2:30 in the afternoon if I want to go watch my daughter in a track meet.
And at the same time, you also can meet a client at 8 o'clock on Sunday evening, because I know you've done that too.
Yes, absolutely.
So that's the rest of the story.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Nice.
And how about you? Anybody pop?
Mine was kind of interesting in that I went from college to starting my first entrepreneurial business as a Mary Kay consultant at 20 as my part-time college job. Discovered I really loved it. A year later, was a car driver and a sales director. So that's kind of my background of when business and sales hit. So I went from this entrepreneurial life for 4 years into corporate world for 5 years after that. And then, so I feel like I got to see both at a really young age and then could make a really informed decision of what truly served my highest self. And what I could really bring into the world for myself and for others. And that was to not be limited by the confines of another corporate structure, because there you have to exist within that culture, within the structure, within their parameters, their ROI expectations. And so for me, seeing both at such an early age was the opportunity to decide, you know, let's do it my way.
Well, and isn't it interesting, because we one of our guests that we've had on the show in the past is a woman by the name of Terry Karjala. She's actually out of Denver, and Terry has she's a serial entrepreneur, but she's a therapist as well, and that's as far as her practice. And one of the things she talks about is that mind chatter, that limiting belief, but that sometimes those limiting beliefs are put on us by corporate structure. You know, you can't do that, says who? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, is it legal, moral, and ethical? And asking the questions, like the key is the questions, right?
Yeah.
You know, and what, and within your business in particular, but you know, that when I see people and I think to myself, what's stopping you? Like, what's stopping you? We've talked statistically, people that move to the United States from other countries legally as immigrants actually have a greater likelihood of being a millionaire than those that are naturally born here. And it's because they just see the opportunity. Mm-hmm. Well, so
it's kind of interesting you bring that up. I mean, I was fortunate. I grew up in a family of entrepreneurs from, I knew my great-grandfather into my teens. It's kind of strange. I'd be a financial advisor and working with clients, you know, I can speak to them. My grandparents are still alive and I haven't seen Karen in a couple months, but they're 97 and 95. They're going on their 77th wedding anniversary this year, which talk about longevity to say the least is in our family. But, you know, and I knew my great grandparents well into my teens and you're right. I mean, entrepreneurs, and I've had discussions with my grandfather, as I got into the business and even as a golfer, even in college. And I've always thought, you know, entrepreneurs have had a mind where failure is not defined as failure, it's learning. You know, I think when people become entrepreneurs, they don't look at the downside, I'll call it, of life. They look at the upside of life. If something doesn't work out or the business doesn't perform the way it's supposed to, I feel like they don't look at it as failure. They looked at it as learning. I mean, I could make my argument that having been a professional golfer and not played the PGA Tour and not won the Masters or a US Open, that you could argue my professional golf career was a failure. I mean, if you looked at it on paper in that sense, although I'd say some people admire it, other people think you're crazy for playing golf. I could understand that. But, you know, when you look at that, it's just very interesting to me that, you know, you go out there and you learn things from different experiences. And I think entrepreneurs are willing to experience those things, whether they're, I will say, a positive result or a result that they weren't looking for. I wouldn't call it failure. I just think that's the way it goes. One of the golf companies I worked for while I was playing professional golf, we were trying to get this company off the ground. And, you know, we were looking at every single way to keep these embroidery needles going. I mean, we didn't care if it was T-shirts, golf towels, head covers, whatever it may be, but the goal was to keep the needles moving. That's how we made money. And, you know, and that business has developed quite a bit since I've been with it. And now they're, I do know now there's somewhere like 24 needles going about 20 hours a day.
That's amazing.
And it's just crazy to think that. And, you know, the reality is I don't think it's ever failure. I think it's the willingness to experience something and learn by trial more than anything else.
Well, and it's really funny. We talk about my company, Summit Funding, the founder of Summit Funding, Todd Scrima, has been a personal friend of mine since 1992. And back then I was actually a realtor and he was his loan officer. And I remember sitting with him at this conference up at the Wigwam in Phoenix, Arizona. And he is sitting next to me and, you know, he's a friend, he's a social friend's, you know, business where there, I don't know, there's like 1,000 people at this event, this conference. And I have never seen anybody so intense writing. And, you know, years later, I mean, he birthed Summit Funding at that event and how it has grown. I mean, we're a $4 billion a year company that's debt free and we lend, 43 states, you know, whatever the case may be. But he talks about this a lot about, do you have a growth mindset or a fixed mindset? And talks about fixed mindset shows up like, you know, well, I'll never be able to be financially successful because my parents weren't good with money, you know, or I can't lose weight because my family were big boned, or take your pick of any other limiting beliefs. And instead of saying I can't, to say what about that might work for me, or how can I do this? I mean, as far as, you know, on the school side of things, having been a teacher, I think, you know, part of, and I'm, this is just my opinion, but a lot of our education system seems to be broken. We're not encouraging our kids. It's like, no, you need to sit here, you need to do that. And it's,
well, this is literally the number one thing that I work with people on, is in coaching, we have a word for this, like inner voice that tells us our limiting belief. We all have one, by the way. We're not crazy. But it's that.
What's yours? I've named mine. Do you have a name for yours?
Well, the general term in coaching, we call it is the inner critic. And so I called mine the guilt and shame monster.
Guilt and shame
to make it
monster.
More fun, because humor helps with this, right? Mm-hmm. But we all have an inner critic, and yet no one wants to talk about it. But it's literally the voice of the limiting belief. It's the voice that says, oh, I should make more money. I should be more successful. Oh, look at her Facebook profile. She must have a better life than mine. Blah, blah, blah.
And everything on Facebook is true?
Absolutely. Didn't she get the Google memo?
I self-diagnose myself on Google daily.
Oh, yeah.
That's a really bad thing. Call your doctor.
Yeah, yeah. Do not. Yeah, Google MD. Don't do that.
Yeah. So I couldn't agree more that I think often the root of what's mostly holding us back is, in the coaching world, the inner critic, our limiting beliefs and our relationship to that fear.
Well, and one of the things that's interesting, go ahead, Don.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say sometimes that inner critic just needs to be shown how to look at something differently. Mm-hmm. When I was transitioning from education to insurance, I was really uncertain that insurance is where I wanted to be. Because, quite frankly, from the outside, it's kind of boring. Not a lot of people get excited about it.
Not so sexy, right?
Yeah, I don't know any little boys who grow up, you know, hoping someday to be an insurance agent. But I was talking to a friend of mine, and she, I told her that it sounds like a really good opportunity, but I just don't see myself being a salesman. And her response was, "Don't sell anything. Just be an educator." And that was my light bulb moment, which propelled me into this. And now, almost 6 years later, here I am on the radio.
With this, and then you've got a very successful practice. You've got, you know, people that work. You've got staff. You know, that's a whole nother learning curve as far as how to hire staff and things like that.
That's kind of interesting. I didn't know that about you. Being an educator was the thing that changed it all.
A lot of women,
and it works.
Yeah, and I see a lot of women entrepreneurs that they actually have the skills, but they often don't have the mindset. I definitely see it in the mortgage industry. Being on the sales side of things is typically a more male role. 90% of the world in the mortgage world is women, but most of them are not in sales. And quite frankly, the money's in sales. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, oh, I'm not a good salesperson. And like I said, I never thought of myself. To me, I never thought of myself necessarily as a salesperson, but I'm really comfortable with that terminology now. And I think, you know, talking about that, and especially with women entrepreneurs, is to understand that it's okay to say sales. And if you trip on the word saying sales, then substitute the word service.
Nice.
Yeah. So as far as that, well, one of the things about businesses, you know, all businesses, no matter what, and as far as the model, is that they have a startup phase. They have a struggle phase. That's number two, right?
Yeah.
Then they have success. Then they have scale. Right. And then typically sell. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about, you know, one of the things that we want to provide. This is a passion of mine as far as the radio show. It's not a mortgage show. It is healthy, wealthy and wise, because what I see when people come into my office, I literally see everything. And also, I ask all the questions your mother told you weren't allowed to ask, such as how much money you have in the bank.
What's your social security
what's
number?
What's your social security number? What's your date of birth? Right. And oh, by the way, and then what income do you make? And by the way, you can't fake it with me because I have to verify it with two additional sources. So tell me what you see. Like, what are the mistakes that you see either business owners, you know, or entrepreneurs that you see that they're, making?
I think it's kind of interesting when you ask that question, because I see it in different facets depending on where a business is. But, you know, a lot of times when we're brought in to cases and being there, like you said, to provide service more than anything else, is you know, when you look at retirement plans for businesses, the reality is it's what is the goal? You know, we work with business owners, you know, who frankly have a more about me mindset, I'll call it, where, you know, the goal of having that benefit is for their own welfare. And by the way, they do some things for their employees. There's others who are goal oriented towards providing a better workforce or providing better benefits to their workforce more than anything else, and not necessarily about them and how you structure it and why you do certain ways. And listening to those conversations first, I mean, my retired business partner, Tom Hall, I still remember, I was probably about 2-3 months into the business. He told me 2 ears and 1 mouth for a reason. And I thought that was kind of interesting. And so, you know, the reality is when you're designing those plans, you got to be listening to why, because, you know, the reality is we all don't think the same, and it's not
really.
My, yeah. and I've always kind of told clients, it's not my job to give you the advice. My job is to listen to you, to provide you what is the best solution for what your goal is more than anything else. And so, you know, while I understand, you know, I'll call it the different tools in the toolbox at that point, you know, the reality is if you don't listen to them, you're crawling up a wall that you're going to fall off of every time.
Yeah. Well, and I think that that's one of the things that's really scary is this one, you know, I strongly believe that every client needs, they need a professional insurance agent. They absolutely need a professional who helps them with their money, a professional advisor. And they need, quite frankly, I feel they need multiple coaches. I
agree with this, of yeah, course.
Yes. Well, but I mean, seriously, I think to myself, you know, Michael Jordan, he knows how to play basketball, right?
Right.
So he had coaches, and I grew up in that sports model many, many years ago. I was a competitive gymnast. I had multiple coaches. And so going, you know, fast forward as far as, I mean, I've had a coach, business professional, or what, you know, different types of coaches or therapists in some cases, mm-hmm. since I started in 83.
And if I can expand on that, what a lot of people don't realize is that coaching in this term of professional coaching in this day and age, which is where a business owner really can benefit in a lot of ways. It's a very specific methodology. It's a very specific discipline. So it does require training because people just don't inherently know it. But there's 3 main goals. And goal number 1 is it creates self-awareness. Goal number 2 is it creates the ability to be self-generating. And goal number 3 is that it can sustain long-term success with whatever you're doing.
So talk to me about the second one, self-generating. What does...
Well, first is self-awareness. Mm-hmm. And so you had said, what is the number 1 thing that business owners need to be working on? And my opinion is the self-awareness. What are you doing to cultivate self-awareness, whether it's coaching or not, in your vision of your business and in understanding your limitations? Because the most successful business owners know, I'm not good at this, therefore I need to go find help or find someone who can do it.
And what is an interesting conversation about that, not only just not good at it, but is it the highest and best use
yeah.
of your
do
time?
Do I even like it?
Yeah.
Is it boring?
Like insurance.
There you go. Aww. No, it could be quite exciting, the insurance. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So like you just said, that's an example of self-generating. Is so when you sit there and you're now looking and you've created that self-awareness and you're saying, I have these tasks that need to be performed, with some introspection and awareness, I can say, is this really worth my time? Is my per hour worth this specific task? Is my joy a part of this? Most of us become entrepreneurs and start a business to have freedom and joy and abundance in our lives. And then we're chained to the business sometimes, right? This is a huge limiting belief that everyone's up against. I think Matt knows this a lot. And so it's that ability to start to make shifts and changes through the self-awareness as we become self-generating.
That's pretty interesting. I can tell you from my own personal experience. I have, like we said, my son will be 3 this summer, and when I became a father, in having lived my own little selfish life before, as I like to call it, where I got to play golf and do whatever I wanted to, and then became an advisor and moved forward. You know, the reality is, you know, when he was born, I decided that, and I had a business partner transitioning at that point, you know, the business ran me. I remember my son being 9 months old and my business partner transitioning clients and having the study to become the registered principal of our office. And
let's talk about that after you finish this. Yeah, what that means.
And it was, I mean, I remember I would work 13 hours a day, come home, have dinner, get my 2 hours with him, read books at night, put him to bed. The whole house is going to bed and Matt's cracking open a book at 9 o'clock at night to start studying. And like you said, and going through that, and I do think it's important in life that you do go through those things. I strongly believe, and hopefully that you don't do them forever, but right. At a certain point I realized, I said, you know what? I'm going to come home at 5 o'clock at night or whatever time it is each day. And when I come home at night until my son goes to bed, that's family time. I don't pick up my cell phone. I don't even have work email on my phone anymore.
It's nice.
I actually have it only on my iPad, which means I have to have Wi-Fi, which is, I jokingly say, unfortunately, is now everywhere. But I
can. There you go.
But when I look at it in kind of what you're saying, I realize that, and I actually explain that to clients when I work with them and say, look, you've got my cell phone number and you know you can get me through email and don't feel bashful to do it. But I'm going to set up this little boundary of time. I said, you know, I'm up at 5 o'clock in the morning and I'm up till 10 o'clock at night. But from 5 to 8 or 8:15 or so, that's my family time. You can leave me a message. You can send me an email. I promise I will respond that day. That's kind of one thing that again, Tom and Bill had always taught me. You know, you always call back the same day, even if there's nothing you can do, just acknowledge that they right. got it. And, you know, the reality is, I mean, that changed my life a lot to what you're saying. I mean, nice. I call that my selfish time.
Curious, are you having more financial abundance in your life in this period than prior?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. There's a reason for that.
Ooh, tell us more.
Well, I'm curious because I don't understand why I work less and it keeps going up.
Yes. So, for those of you who think I'm going to get woo-woo.
That's okay. We call it woola.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah, woola with woola.
Yeah, the woola turn. Yeah, it's woola. And then that's, thank you very much to one of my coaches. Yay. Who I just had brain death, but there you go. But yes.
Yeah, so.
Siobhan Moran, that was who I was thinking of.
Oh, yeah. Nice. So law of attraction, some people are familiar with this term, some people are not. There are lots of roots with law of attraction in science, psychology, biblical, even Greek philosophers. So what we really see as coaches is that the more someone comes into true alignment with their authentic selves, meaning all aspects of their selves are being represented, such as playing with trains on a floor with a 3-year-old.
With a 3-year-old, I love it.
And like an oozing joy. Oozing,
I have
it, right?
Way too much fun doing that.
Right. No, there's not such thing. Too much fun with your son. That's yeah. It's oozing joy is
right.
Good.
Yeah. It's funny how there's a principle of when we're in this certain energy of alignment with our true selves, our authentic selves, our highest selves, if you will. There's lots of words we could give this. It suddenly seems that the world starts to shift and we attract things with more ease that are in alignment to us.
So I have a really weird question.
Go for it. I love weird.
Weird.
Let's go.
So does that mean that as you develop your business and as time keeps going, that the clients you work with, that you have kind of this, that you're going to start attracting those types of people? Because I've noticed in my career, and I think we can all say this, when you first start out, you do about anything you can to just
yep.
keep the lights
Everyone's
on.
Everyone's my client.
Yep. Everybody's my client. And then at a certain point, you get to a spot, and I know Karen touched on it in my bio because I believe it. You know, I like to work with people oftentimes who come in looking at the world with hesitation, and now they leave with anticipation. I always talk about that because I'm genuinely, I think, a happy person. I look at the world half full. As Karen said, I'm a Chicago Cubs fan. I believed in a lot of things and it finally happened after 108 years.
I love it.
Oh my gosh.
It's very true. I always thought that even though they were mathematically out of it, it still could happen. But, you know, the reality is, you know, I've noticed that in business, and I think you're touching on something and I could speak to it, is that, you know, calling it, and you've quantified it in a word now for me that I didn't understand, is, you know, I found myself, if you will. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I start attracting people who are like that. And when they come in with, you know, concerns or questions, and they're looking for understanding and financial planning as a whole, that's, you know, I can let them leave with that anticipation, and I see that in them. And I think that's why we stay together. And I notice that sometimes business that leaves, it's because, and I kind of say it this way, I never felt like I connected with them. We were on two different wavelengths. That was
there you
my
go. That energy
my
wavelength.
Non-business coach term. We're not on the same wavelength.
Yeah. And it's so true. And so what's interesting is that you used a different word that plays into this, and that's boundaries. So what are the boundaries? We often think of that as a negative term, or somehow we're going to hurt someone's feelings, right?
Oh, we don't want to do that. No, you can't hurt someone's feelings.
No, but what boundaries are letting you stay in your authenticity and in that alignment? And if you don't have those boundaries in place, like what happens to a cup of water that breaks? The boundary leaves, the water goes everywhere. It's kind of the same thing with energy. And I know that in this day and age, energy is more accepted in this context of business and life. And so I'm so excited that more and more people can look at this as not a woo-woo, Tabitha's being crazy moment, and that it's real. And we have so much evidence and case studies now of seeing how that alignment actually attracts more wealth, because other people are looking for your same energetic alignment.
And what is interesting to me about that, and giving appropriate kudos to Siobhan Moran, who turned the thing as far as Woola. I mean, her.
I love that word.
She came out of the total corporate world, and what she is doing and what's happening, and it's really quite amazing. She's out of California, become pretty close friends, and she's been one of my coaches in the past. But what I find to be interesting is hearing the language. Like, I can sit with a client, and part of it is heartbreaking to me to hear how limiting they are about what they could possibly do. Like, if they've screwed up their credit, how they think that, like, oh, that's always going to be the case. It's not the case. It's a snapshot in time. What did you learn from it? What can we do? What can we go forward? So it's huge. So I think you've really touched on something. And then you see it as far as with clients. You have to sometimes need to sell. You have to sell on the other side to let people know, yes, I know you're being optimistic that you're the world's best driver and that nothing's ever going to happen to your business and nothing's ever going to happen to your building. But maybe look at the statistics. So how do you do that without being
like a mafia boss?
Yeah, that would be a good
That's an awfully nice business you have there. It'd be a shame if something happens to it.
That's good.
The Don Cox humor.
This is how he makes insurance interesting, is through his humor, actually.
Yes, so it's funny because, Karen, you mentioned asking people all those questions that you're not supposed to ask. That's my approach as well. I don't really want to know what my client's net worth is. I just want to know that the amount of liability coverage that I am suggesting to them is enough to protect them if they had a really, really catastrophic incident that we're going to write the big check so that they don't have to worry about that. One example I guess I can give, not naming names, of course, to protect the innocent. Somebody got in their Nissan Sentra, got T-boned by a very, very large gravel truck that was fully loaded.
Oh, dear.
And the gravel truck company had very, very minimal insurance limits. And this has been going on for over 2 years now. And it's an ongoing thing. And because of privacy laws, I'm not allowed to know every little detail that's going on. But I can't imagine being a business owner and the nightmare that must be. Knowing that suddenly, my insurance wasn't enough for even the first day in the emergency room.
Oh my gosh. Whoa. Oh my gosh.
So
that could be very devastating to business.
And I think there's this thing as far as the checklist. I mean, you, as a business owner or an entrepreneur, both, any level that you're at, I think it's really important to find out, okay, well, what do I need to know about this? Mm-hmm. And to get the information, I mean, we do have information at our fingertips, like the search engines and Google and stuff like that. You can't depend upon that. But maybe just having a conversation, like talking to a personal injury attorney, perhaps talking to a personal injury attorney and say, what do you see with your clients? What do you wish your clients would have had in place if you, on either side, let's say you're defending somebody or, you know, the other case.
Exactly. The challenge is that nobody actually likes insurance. It's a necessary
really?
Evil. Yes, it's a bill that none of us ever want to pay until the day something happens. And then it's too late to find out if you
have appropriate coverage.
Appropriately yeah. covered. So I ask the question, I want to dial down what do you have to lose here? Interesting fact, the state minimum coverage in the state of Arizona is $15,000 of liability, bodily injury liability per person. And that was established in 1972 when Richard Nixon was still president.
Think about that.
That's crazy.
And so...
not enough.
People want to go out and find a cheap insurance policy, and I totally respect that, but... cheap isn't always best. The question is, how much do you have to lose? And so my job is to find a balance between coverage and price and try to find a way to make that fair and help people sleep better at night.
So including yourself, so you know that they're appropriately covered.
Oh, yeah, I never want to be on the wrong end of that phone call.
Yeah,
saying
that's for
somebody
sure.
didn't have enough coverage. Yeah. So Matt's going to help them make all their money, and then I'm going to help them keep all their money.
Well, and talking about making all their money, one of the questions, and this is actually something that we've had a deep, in-depth conversation about, but one goal that it seems that a lot of self-employed people want to do is they want to just make sure that they don't pay any taxes, minimize their taxes, you know, so, and then they're quite shocked where they've had this business that has been supporting them in a very nice lifestyle, perhaps, and they've legally, morally, and ethically written off everything as far as arranging their affairs in that place. And then they're shocked to find out that maybe Social Security isn't really that like, how come I don't understand why I'm only getting $700 a month in Social Security when I had all of this.
No, it's a very interesting thing. You know, I mean, Social Security, there's a lot of discussion about, you know, solvency and all this stuff. And, you know, the reality is, you know, I can't really even speak to what it will be. I know it's an ever-changing thing, and I know there's data points and various things that are out there. But, you know, when I look at this, you know, one of the common things I've seen, and it's even happened in our business, is an example where, you know, simply put, you're trying to minimize payroll taxes. So you sit there and you wind up paying yourself as a salary about the bare minimum that you can. And as a result, sometimes it affects how much you can put into a retirement plan, depending on what the amounts are and what those goals are. And to me, it's not so much mandating that you pay yourself the maximum allowable to be able to put the most into a retirement plan. But, you know, the biggest thing that I've noticed is being able to work with CPAs of clients and being able to have a discussion and an open dialogue that's kind of ongoing. It's not a one-time discussion that says we need to set our salaries at X and we're good to go forever. The reality is businesses evolve. We've already talked about that. There's different stages and they don't always come in that order. Sometimes you see rapid success off the beginning and then plateau, and sometimes it's struggle early and then fast at the end. And mm-hmm. and so when I see that, you know, one of the things that just I look at is realizing that a lot of times business owners who are going to retire, their Social Security benefits are just not what they were thinking they were. They had handsome earned incomes when they looked at their tax returns. But when they looked at their benefits, they didn't really understand. And so, you know, again, that kind of comes into the planning portion of it. If you're planning on having a low Social Security number as a result of the things that you've done, then, you know, planning for bridging that gap is equally more important. You know, a lot of small businesses don't have pension plans. I mean, I can say first off, a lot of us are going to retire on what we've got plus Social Security right now. And so
if we still have that.
Right. And so when I look at all that, you know, I say, you know, realistically, you need to have a plan in place that allows you to save what is needed to bridge that gap. And I joke about it. I'm not the tallest guy in the world. I'm about 5'7". So I kind of always say when I'm talking to clients, I said, you know, the question is if you're trying to get to 5'7" worth of income, you know, Social Security could be a foot of it. It could be 6 inches of it. It could be 2 feet of it. But the point being is you also have to make up that difference. And the less amount you have in those guaranteed income streams that we talk about when we're planning, the more you got to have on the other side. And so it's being able to balance the two and understand that sometimes making decisions that with your CPA and or your CFO or controller on the way that you're paying yourself in order to maximize other benefits, I think it's important.
Well, and you touched on something else. You talked about the CPA, and we talked at length as far as the team approach. But when you meet with clients, what is the most common hole that you see with clients when they first meet with you? Like, what is it that you think, I just wish people knew this to start out with?
Well, I mean, it kind of goes around the Social Security discussion a little bit, or talking about, I like to talk about the efficiencies of assets. So when you think about the efficiency, you know, I think one, your goal is to keep as much as you can or keep as much of your earnings as you can. And I do think the other thing is then allow those to stay efficient for you for whatever that goal may be. And when I look at it, you know, I, again, kind of talking about business owners more than anything else right now, at least for this, is, you know, I see them sometimes not being able to maximize their retirement benefits, and that they are creating holes in a retirement plan where they're not being able to save enough through pre-tax methods sometimes, if that's the case that they want to go through, simply because they may not be paying themselves enough, or they don't have the right plan, whatever that may be, that they're sponsoring at their company. The other thing I really see, which is kind of interesting on the other side, is if you're a non-business owner, you're out there working in the world for a larger employer, even a smaller employer, and they show up and literally 80 or 90% of their assets are in pre-tax accounts, and they've not really, I'll call it, diversified just where on a tax basis their retirement assets are. And sometimes it's too late and sometimes it's not. I'm actually working with two guys right now, of all things. They're recently married and they're in their mid-30s. One of them owns his own business. They're successful and on their way. And that was one of the roads they were going down right away, is they're stuffing away all this money pre-tax. And that's totally fine, except I don't like to use making the bet, but you're making a bet that tax rates are going to be equal to or lower in retirement than they are now, for whatever income you're drawing. Believe what you'd like to or not about the future. I can't predict tax rates.
Haven't they always gone up so far?
Not always.
Not always?
You know, I mean, okay. But when I look at it, you know, the reality is, you know, being able to show them that saving, what savings in different buckets look like at first is almost more important than how it's invested. I wouldn't argue that, you know, bad investments are bad investments. That's a whole other discussion. But if you have dollars appropriated between pre-tax, after-tax, such as Roth, and then, you know, in a, what I'll call a taxable account or a non-qualified account, and being able to have all of that, then you're going to be able to make decisions. And I really think, you know, financial freedom as a whole is being able to make decisions about what you want or don't want. And when all your assets are tied up one way or another, that can affect how you're doing it.
Yeah, and I definitely see that piece as well. One of the things that I feel a big part of anything is actually that awareness, and actually looking at things, and not just looking at, you talk about the self-awareness, but also that financial awareness. Mm-hmm. We have gone to such a digital age. One of the first litmus tests that I have clients on, and I literally ask them as a loan officer, is how many pages are your bank statements? And they go, I don't get any bank statements. It's all online. And I said, okay, I want you to go to your bank and I want you to print them off, because I need statements, not a transaction history. And literally, what I have seen, this is the trend that I've seen over the years, the clients that have 6 to 7 to 8 page bank statements, I'll guarantee you that they're swipers. They are leeching money out like they're just, and they had no idea. And most of it's going to food. Mm. And most of it's going to not healthy food, mm-hmm. is what I'm saying. I'm like, I had a client recently that had they were supposedly saving. They had no idea that within a short period of time that he had swiped his card 52 times within a 1 month bank statement. 52 times. And that's not unusual.
Didn't get carpal tunnel?
Yeah, you can get to carpal tunnel. Can you insure for that as far as the carpal tunnel on that?
I don't do health insurance.
Yes.
Wait, spending's not an employment base?
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, part of that, you know, and to look at all of those areas and to not be, I said this earlier, to not be in a silo, to reach out and to get advice and counsel and maybe to not be so busy being busy. And take a little bit of time to actually pause.
Can I speak to that for a second?
Oh, you can. Of course you can.
I'm
yes.
like, I'll sink my teeth into that one. We have such an epidemic right now around this busyness problem. And so my personal opinion as a coach, from what I see, is that this is the greatest illusion that exists in our current world of how we are creating limiting beliefs.
Tell us more.
It's the best excuse for why people are not achieving their goals. Well, I really do want to write a book. Just talked to someone today about this, actually. Really, really want to write a book. Okay. So we coached around it. We figured out how important it was, what the book would be about, everything. And so when I said, well, when would you like to get started? The response was a month and a half from now.
Oh,
I'm just so busy. So that tells me there's something else underneath that
that's stopping,
actually preventing this. There's fear, there's doubt, there's maybe self-judgment. I don't know, but there's the busyness thing is an illusion in my world.
It's actually funny you bring this up. So I'm in a book club of guys. We call it Books and Bourbon. It's
fun. I'm starting a book club.
And there's seven of us or so. We're all kind of similar ages in Tucson, various industries. And I actually picked a book last month that I had recently listened to. I thought the whole group should listen to it.
It was Go Dog Go.
It was Dr. Seuss book.
Bourbon and Dr. Seuss.
Atomic Habits. Was very interesting to me was, as a professional golfer, I had an identity, and I had this identity of, you know, I will outwork people and that would give me confidence and so on and so forth and go through. And as I got into the professional world and then became a father and then a business owner and all these various things, you know, we started talking, the book talks at one point about identities and who you are. And it was very interesting. One of the guys, and we actually, we're only supposed to be hanging around and drinking bourbon for an hour and a half, and this turned into a 3.5-hour discussion with more than one bottle of bourbon. But but really, the three of us sat around and talked about three different things, and I think it's very interesting. One was fatherhood. One was being a husband. We all happen to be men. And the other thing is business, and then really also your personal identity. And so I was talking about certain things that I wanted to do in my life right now that I feel is part of my own personal identity, maybe not how somebody else views me. And I said, but I don't make time for it. And, you know, we get into all these things. And so one of the guys said, well, I actually have a list when I was reading this book about all the different identities I have. And no, none of the identities are more important than another. They're aggregate the person that we are. And he was trying to list an activity or something that he does to achieve that identity, whether it's on a daily, weekly, monthly, or annual basis. And the one that actually came up the most between the three of us is we all had listed, you know, successful businessman, something, and then we had listed husband. But there was no adjective in front of husband. We just were husband.
Ooh, good
and
awareness.
So what was really interesting was is that one of the guys said when he realized that he was just being husband, not a good husband, he said, you know, once a week, I am going to do this. And it doesn't have to be a daily thing. And we were all sitting around. It actually got into a pretty in-depth conversation about being the role of being a husband. And all of a sudden, one of the guys says, well, we have a month anniversary, my wife and I, meaning we were, I think it was the 23rd or the 24th they were married on. So no matter what day of the week it falls on, that's their date night. It's only once a month.
What a great idea.
That's a cute idea.
I hope my wife listens to this.
yes.
But what was really interesting is he said that one monthly activity – in his mind was achieving that one goal, even if nothing else ever happened that month. And sometimes we go through months without having dates or whatever it may be in the various things. And we actually all wound up listing all of our identities that we thought we had. And then we had an activity, whether if it was daily, weekly, monthly, or just once a year. I mean, there's certain things that we identify ourselves with that only occur once a year. Easter was just this last weekend. And so, you know, I know some people in the Christian faith go once a year to church, and I get it, but that helps them identify with who they are. It doesn't matter the frequency. It's understanding that this activity allows me to be that. And
what they very affectionately get called CEOs.
Yeah.
Church and Easter only.
Yeah.
Christmas and Easter only is what I want to say.
So says the Jewish kid who went to Easter services.
There you go.
But it was very interesting. And so when we went through that, I've actually now listened to the book two more times, but you're bringing up something that I think was so true. That, you know, I identified myself in so many different ways, and all of a sudden I realized there were no activities in those lives. And then scheduling those things, just like you're talking about, somebody who wants to write a book, they're identifying themselves as an author or wanting to become one.
But what steps are you going to take to get
it? You don't have to write the book every day. You can write it on, you know, once a week, once a month.
Mm-hmm. One of my, this is a really great quote from Jerry Seinfeld, of all people. Oh. Yeah, Jerry Seinfeld's phenomenal. But somebody, a young comedian, had come up to Jerry and asked him, you know, what's the secret of being a great comedian? And he answered that you've got to write great jokes. Well, what's the secret to writing great jokes? And he says, you need to write every day. You need to write every day. And he said, and my suggestion to you and to anybody that's listening, this is from Seinfeld, he said, you write every day, and then when you write every day for a week, I want you to take a great big map and calendar, write every day for a week, put an X on there, and then after you've got a week of those, now you've got a chain. And then he said it twice, the key is to not break the chain. I repeat, don't break the chain. And that has been like, wow, because, you know, in business for me, you know, it is never, you know, like you're not going to have 86 million loans all come in all the same day. But, you know, are you doing the activities to, for me personally, to generate 2 to 3 referrals a day? What are you doing per day? And if you're off on that count, what are you doing to shift or change and things like that? The biggest thing that I've had to learn, and you'll appreciate this as a coach, is the concept of plate. If you've got a lot of things on your plate and then you want to add something else, like you're going to add being an author on that plate, something's got to be taken off that plate.
Yep.
And then how do you do that? And then which things do you know to take off of? And the biggest, one of the big lessons for me personally was I was really clear about doing the things that brought me joy, doing the things that, as far as that. So that wasn't the question. The delegation piece for me, I had to learn, and it's a process. I'm not there. But there are things that I love to do within the mortgage world, but they don't necessarily make the cash register ring. And it's very interesting. And you got to ask on those things.
Right. Income-producing activities versus non-income-producing activities.
It's like Don Cox wearing a sombrero and yelling, I'm going to Mexico.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And this always shocks people because we're almost up on our hour, but I want to make sure, it's always fun. I want to make sure that you each clearly state your name, and as anybody that knows, as far as my phone request, that I have I also ask you to repeat the number twice. Great tip for our listeners, because in this day of communication via cell phones, if you're going through an icky, sticky, staticky area, I can't tell you how many times I've received phone calls from somebody that I really would have done business with. You know, they're calling and they're prospecting me, and their number is garbled. So do yourself a favor, always leave your phone number twice. So anybody can pop.
You
can.
Okay. Well, I am Tabitha Danlow with the Divine Sophia. You can reach me at 520-409-2988. again. That's 520-409-2988. And my website is the Divine Sophia, spelled SOPHIA.com.
Awesome.
I'm Matthew Rosen, and our phone number at the office is 520-829-6230. Again, 520-829-6230. We're also on the internet, and that's burkehallandco.com. B-U-R-K, no E. Everybody likes to give my business partner, Bill Burke, an E at the end of his name.
I am Don Cox. My phone number is 520-244-3707. I am located on the northeast corner of Sunrise and Kolb, so you can stop in and say hi anytime as well. That number again, 520-244-3707. I do have a website, but it would probably take us well over our hour for me to read it. So I will just say Google Farmers Insurance Don Cox, and hopefully I'm the only one that pops up.
That's great.
Although there is a farmer's insurance agent in Oklahoma named Don Cox.
Oh, so you just have to have to be specific as far as Arizona.
Yeah,
so.
Make sure it's Arizona.
And I'm with Summit Funding. I'm Karen Fisher with Summit Funding. Although I have to have multiple numbers because I am only a number with the Arizona Department of Financial Institution and the National Mortgage License Service. So my number is 180167. That's my NMLS number. That I only need to repeat once. But my phone number is 520-447-2279. That's 520-447-2279. One thing I want to let people know, I do offer a free consultation on mortgage analysis. I have a lot of clients that right now, the interest rates are the lowest that they've been in 13 months. I have a lot of clients that are able to eliminate mortgage insurance right now or some other things, maybe shorten their term. So, and then we still have a little bit. We do have a little bit of time. Not much. We've got four more minutes. But so this is where I get to have fun as the hostess. So I want you each to tell me what's the one thing you would do differently when you started your business, knowing what you know now. What would you do differently with starting your business? And then the second is, and you'll get a grin out of this if anybody knows anything about Monty Python. What's your favorite color?
I'll go first. The humorous answer is that I would have started it many, many, many years ago because it's been fantastic watching it grow. So it would be nice to be 10 years into it, but I'll get there eventually. The other thing, and this is a whole other hour-long episode, I would have joined BNI, Business Network International, on the first day I opened my agency instead of waiting a year to get into that. Fantastic networking group and has been the lifeblood of my business.
Your business growth, for sure, yeah.
And my favorite color is red.
Red, okay, there you go.
That's kind of a hard question.
Your favorite color is a hard question?
No, it's Chicago Cubs blue. That's really...
Oh, okay, well, there you go, okay.
It's actually a shade. I would say I think the one thing that I wish I would have done a little bit more of is it kind of goes back to the bio a little bit, was identifying really who I wanted to work with. I think we all wind up taking business at the beginning to keep the lights on and keep payroll going and everything. But the reality is, you know, I've found that if you work with people you like, it's not work. I mean, my wife jokes with me. I'm in the office somewhere between 45 and 60 hours a week, and I've never looked at it as work. My father's 72. He still works every single day. He's an attorney. He loves what he does. It's not work to him. And I think, especially in businesses where you're interacting with people, if you enjoy the people you work with, it's not work. You're just really hanging out with your friends at the end of the day and providing a service.
Yeah. Well, I'd have to say that this might sound strange to some people, but I was not into social media at all. And so that took some time to build some, to overcome some fear, actually, about being in social media and understanding how to use it as a business tool. And so it's funny, but it's such a great channel. And I know so many business owners that I coach that they're afraid of social media. And yet in this world that we live in, it's a really important presence to have. So I did it 2 years into my business, but that's the one thing, if I could go back and start that presence day one to build that kind of social media surround sound, that's what I would do different. And for colors, I'd have to say it's teal, like a peacock teal.
That.
And I just love that color. And
I'm colorblind. That's green.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Well, for me personally, on the mortgage side of things, what I would have done first is to jot down everything and create my standard operating procedures, because you have to have a lot of help. Behind the scenes, there's 75 people that touch every single loan file, bare bones minimum for every file.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's lots of people in there. So I would have documented standard operating procedures with screenshots and things like that. That's all in place now, but I would have done that first. And then my favorite color is blue. So that wraps us up for the show. I thank you so much, all three of you, for being my guests.
Thanks for
business
having
owners,
us.
Yes. Entrepreneurs, yes, solopreneurs, please pick up the phone. I know. Initial consultation, how much do you charge?
Zero.
Matt charges zero. How much do you charge?
Zero.
Initial consultation.
Free.
Free. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful, it's going to be May. Can you believe it?
No.
Going to be May.
Oh, and instead of busyness with May, think of abundance.
Ooh, I like that. Abundance.
Abundance instead of busyness. Abundance, it is kind of crazy that it's almost May.
Yes. Yeah. And sometimes people tell me that I'm too busy. I'm like, no, I'm not too busy. I'm plated right now a little bit, but I'm always available and I will always call you back.
Nice.